You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters Live.
Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a writer and broadcaster specialising in food and science. Now, we're recording on location at Food Matters Live at XL, and this podcast is all about the Food Tech 500. We're joined by Alessio Dantino, founder and CEO of Forward Fooding, the world's first collaborative platform for the food and beverage industry. Hello, Alessio.
Hi, Stephen.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get on to the Food Tech 500, can you tell me all about Forward Fooding? Explain how you work and what you do.
Sure. Well, I guess I've been asked this question a few times, so I should be able to answer. But basically, in a nutshell, Forward Fooding is the world's first collaborative platform for the food and beverage industry, where we combine actually food tech data intelligence with corporate startup collaborations to hopefully creating a better future of food. In a nutshell, what this means is that effectively we try to be on the lookout of every innovation that occurs, you know, in the entrepreneurial world, and we try to bring it actually to large corporates that can help, I guess, these companies to scale these innovations. And by doing that, we really think that we can at least contribute to bettering our food system, as we are strong believers of the fact that tech and entrepreneurship can really be key ingredients to cook up a new recipe for our food system.
And you, are you a fundraising enabler? Are you an introduction agent? I mean, what's the main part of it for you?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually, that we also get asked quite often. I think the best way to describe what we're trying to do is a network enabler. We don't work on the fundraising side of things at all. We don't work on the pure, if you will, business supply chain management and all this type of, of stuff. What we do is we really match some of our corporate clients' needs when it comes to innovation from a product and technology perspective to existing solutions that we see in the market.
Perfect. Okay. Now, on to Food Tech 500. Is this your own creation?
Yes, it is. And we're very proud, actually, of, pulling it out as a first attempt, really, to create a list of the movers and shakers of the agri-food tech world. And I said that I'm particularly proud because we had no idea where we were going to be honest with you. We had a plan, which is always a good starting point, I guess. But we had very ambitious, you know, numbers that we wanted to hit in terms of number of applications we were going to receive from entrepreneurs, again, from the agri-food tech world. But we had no clue where we were gonna, when and how we were gonna hit these numbers beyond, you know, our marketing, I guess, plan. Now, the reason why I'm emphasizing, I guess, this is because it's been a really fascinating journey also for our team to go through. Really, you know, identifying the right partners that could have helped us, you know, to relay the information about the fact that we were running this campaign, to identify, you know, the 500 most inspirational, you know, companies in the world of agri-food tech, but also, you know, figuring out with our own network where how many companies we could have reached. And so eventually we closed actually the applications on November the 15th after running the campaign for about two and a half actually months.
And for listeners who may be listening to this at any time of the year, that was 5 days ago.
Yes, it was indeed. And over that period of time, we were able to collect about 1,200 companies from all, literally every corner of the world. And that's really what makes us really proud, because I guess the most difficult also part of our job is identifying the best solutions anywhere in the globe.
So you've collected your 500. But now there's another chunk of the work that's just about to begin, isn't there? Can you explain what that is?
Of course. So we went from 1,200 companies to a short list of 500 finalists. And the way we have selected these businesses is based on a number of criteria, including, for instance, being actually a company and not an accelerator or a VC firm or an agency or a consulting firm. So the company needed to be incorporated, needed to be less than 10 years old to be, I guess, defined as a startup or a scale-up.
Yeah.
Needed to have a team in place, an active website, as we're going to showcase them, and so we wanted other people to actually be able to understand what the company does, and a number of other criteria that, you know, are really, to be honest, common sense.
Right? It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because we're talking about startups, people right at the start of the cycle. So is one of the criteria that they have to have a product already available?
Yes.
They do? Okay.
Yeah, it is. So we have received a number of applications from companies that told us, you know, we don't have a website yet. We're building the prototype. We had probably enough also to take them out of the list. But the reason was that we wanted to showcase the movers and shakers, so the ones that are already active in the market, right?
If you're able to move, then you've got to have something to move.
Exactly. Now, the interesting piece, I guess, is that there is a mix of businesses that are revenue generating, that are funded, as well as others that haven't received funding yet, and they might be at the pre-seed level, all the way through actually companies they've raised their Series C. So it spans, you know, also to give you some numbers, I guess, in terms of employees, from 3 employees to 100 plus.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we received...
I do find this fascinating because you're trying to get a snapshot of something where the spark is happening, where it's exciting, not that's already established and it's been going for a while. This is, you know, the bright hopes and the people that have the most potential, which is why it's really difficult getting people who are just big enough to really register on the scale, but not too big that they're already sort of mainstream.
Yes.
And is that a tricky balance to hit?
It is a very tricky balance, to be honest. Again, as I said earlier, we did not have an idea of what type of companies, you know, we're going to apply. I mean, or better yet, how many were going to be, you know, very early stage and how many were going to be scale-ups, right? But I guess we kept it, you know, broad intentionally to really get what we call the grassroots innovation, right? So those solutions that might be now too early, you know, to actually hit the market as well.
Yeah.
But that combined with solutions that are a little bit more established and companies that maybe are, you know, even 10 years old, which was kind of like when you needed to draw a line, right?
Yeah.
That are actually more established. And so I guess the combination of both then makes it pretty interesting just to understand, I guess, the spectrum of activities that are occurring, you know, across the whole, like, food tech world.
Yeah. Now, on one level, obviously, it's very lovely for these companies to sort of show off and to say I'm on the Food Tech 500 list. What other benefit does being on the list offer, rather than just being able to go, "Hey, look at me, I'm great.
Look at me, I'm great." Yeah. So first off, yeah, the main goal or our mission, I guess, with it was really to put these companies under a spotlight, right? We know that it's difficult to, I guess, find them. And so we wanted really to give them a platform where they could showcase, you know, their solutions. The benefits that come with it are actually a few, including the fact that they are going to receive actually a digital badge that they will be proudly, hopefully, show off on their website. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not, you know, because we wanted them just to brag about their solutions, but it's really about, I think, also fostering, you know, the companies that are going to be the ones that we think will shape up the future, right? So giving them, a platform to showcase is equally important for us as recognizing basically their work, as we see that oftentimes the challenges when it comes to working with large corporates or selling, you know, their solutions to large organizations is really, you know, the lack of understanding of what these companies do and what their solutions can deliver.
Okay, now I know you're at the start of the phase of ranking these, which must be the tricky bit. What is particularly exciting in terms of movements, drifts, vegan, alternative protein? What has struck you about the 500 that you've got in terms of the different sort of themes, the different sizes, the levels of excitement? Experience or inexperience?
Yeah. Well, that's a $1 million question, I guess. And it's really difficult to pick one. But first and foremost, I guess, it's important to pinpoint that we had... So what we define as agri-food tech actually falls under 8 macro categories that are the ones that we think are indicative of the breed of innovation that are occurring across the supply chain when it comes to tech. And they go from ag tech, so solutions like precision farming,
things like GPS
sensors, robotics,
and
drones,
in the field,
yep. All the way through consumer apps and anything in between. So, you know, next generation food and drinks in terms of ingredients, but also food waste management solutions, through biotech, you know, ingredients that will replace maybe sugar or other, you know, more traditional ingredients. So that's, I guess, was the spectrum that we're working within, because you need to put some stitchers at some point. Otherwise, you know, you get all sort of things. Now, within that, we see that there are, I guess, solutions that are a little bit more advanced in terms of maturity. Mm-hmm. For instance, food waste management solutions like, you know, smart scales that help restaurants to measure their food waste, or smart appliances that turn waste into a byproduct that then can be used, whether it's energy, whether it's dehydrating something and then upscaling it and turning it into another ingredient. Mm. And then there are things like more related, I guess, to biotech, like synthesization of protein or even, you know, nanoencapsulation techniques and all these type of things that tend to be, I guess, a little bit less mature just because are actually emerging technologies.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's difficult to pick one, but I guess the macro trends that we see also through the FoodTech 500 are actually the same, to be honest, that we see from our Food to Data Navigator, which is actually a data intelligence tool that we use to make sense of what's happening in the innovation space. And I guess the three key ones are reinventing protein, so anything from plant-based to, you know, using biotech solutions to creating protein out of thin air, which is actually a thing. I always kind of have a hard time even like saying it, but it's actually a thing. I can tell you that at least 3 to 4 companies that made it into the 500 shortlist actually are working on making protein out of thin air.
I love that. Which, I can't wait to read more. Yeah.
Which, by the way, you know, is technically possible, because what they're doing is effectively condensing the air and taking the richer part of the protein that actually is in the CO. So it's not, you know, after of course it's emerging, it's very, you know, early days.
Yeah. And I think that's what should be exciting about the list. You know, as well as technologies that you can kind of think, yeah, absolutely, there's a place for this. There should be space for hopes and dreams, and in the knowledge that some of these will, you know, fly too close to the sun and fail, because that, you know, if something's cutting edge, then it should be a bit daring.
Big time. I can't agree more with your words. And I think that actually, again, boils down to the journey. Meaning some of these entrepreneurs are, I think, putting the journey as the most important thing of why they're building these businesses, right? It's not about how successful necessarily their technology is going to be, but how much this journey will help them to learn as much as they can to actually make their business successful in the long haul. Mm. And this is, I think, is a really interesting approach to innovation that I'm going to say new generations are bringing in.
Yeah. Is that a risk factor that they're bringing in? That they're willing to try things that people just weren't willing to try before?
Because I guess,
the risk was too high.
The risk was too high, but also, you know, I guess historically in the F&B world, you know, the whole space has been dominated by large corporates, right? And the dynamics, when you get to that size, change completely, right? Especially when it comes to innovation. And I experienced that firsthand when I actually joined a corporate and I was working within the innovation department. I guess this new wave of entrepreneurs are really coming to this space with completely different eyes, which is, first off, they challenge a status quo, mistake, you know, animal protein. They're like, why do we still eat, you know, animal protein while we can maybe recreate, you know, the same texture, the same flavor, whatever, using plants? Or how can we synthesize, you know, a protein to actually replace sugar? This is a thing, right? I mean, and the challenge there is, of course, you know, it's probably, some of these solutions are probably a few years away, R&D-wise, from being, you know, economically viable and scalable. But again, it's the journey that will point you to the right directions, I think, of where is the biggest opportunity for you in the short term, and where you can, you know, further develop the technology or, you know, whatever you're working on, to then, you know, get as big as many of the other players that are currently in the market.
Now, you are in a privileged position because you're gathering this extraordinary group of companies together, and you should be able to see, you know, you're not, you're not controlling the investment, you're not fundraising, but you're seeing the direction of fundraising and investment. Are you seeing people taking more risks on what would traditionally be seen as a wilder punt? Or is it all still down to the numbers and crunching Excel spreadsheets and working out whether somebody is really viable? Are they taking a risk on emerging markets that maybe haven't matured yet?
Cool. So I guess the question is, just to make sure that I get it right.
Quite right, too.
Because it's another $1 million question here. Are entrepreneurs more willing to take risk than, I guess, the previous generation?
I'm thinking, are the investors backing those entrepreneurs taking the bigger risks, the wilder ideas?
Big time.
Really?
And I'll tell you why. Exciting. Because the industry doesn't do that. Mm. That's where entrepreneurs are all about, you know, speculative opportunities. So, you know, there are a number now of VC firms specifically investing in agri-food tech, just because they see that the corporates lag behind probably a couple of years in actually getting early on in these deals. And so they want to put their money in so that one day, hopefully, you know, anytime soon, a big corporate would realize that have missed an opportunity and will gobble up their company.
Yeah. And is that the general direction? That's what people are looking for, is that sort of exit strategy. They're not building a standalone brand. They're building something that will be consumed into one of the big conglomerates.
I mean, difficult to generalize, but I would say from the private investor world, so which in my view includes anything from a retail investor all the way through institutional and even, you know, venture arms, I guess it's all speculative, right? It's about backing up technologies, backing up brands as well, that eventually, you know, hopefully will get consolidated.
And that, because that is a clear exit strategy there. Yeah. Right there, that is when you can get return on your investment.
Especially on tech. Yeah. In tech, I think that's usually the case. With brands can vary a little bit more. I mean, you can provide also permanent capital as a VC firm to a business and, you know, hoping that we'll get to a point where either someone, again, will gobble them up, or they're going to IPO, whatever, you know, the journey will be. But I guess usually, in the vast majority of cases, it's really about, you know, speculating on the future development of these businesses and awfully, you know, helping them to grow to a point where they are interesting enough for large corporates, you know, to gobble them up.
It makes a lot of sense. I would probably do the same thing if I had the billions.
Yeah. Right.
now, here at Food Matters Live, we've heard the word disruptor used a heck of a lot. And I wonder if we are becoming a little bit immune to that word. It's been used so much. You know, for a while, it sort of sounded sexy. Disruption. Is disruption just innovation? And just dressed up in with a slightly sexier word, do you think?
I guess. So I really force myself not to use the word disruption. And I'll tell you why, because it actually gives people a really wrong, perception of what actually is happening in the innovation space. And what I mean by that is, you know, innovation in F&B is not, I think it looks very different from what it used to be a long time ago.
Yeah.
Meaning, when people ask me, you know, what are the, I guess, most interesting emerging technologies you see, I usually tend to not to focus on the solution itself and the tech behind it, but is the approach on how you bring the technology to market that I think is really game changing. And what I mean by that again is there is a new breed of entrepreneurs who are looking at doing business in a completely different way than, you know, large corporates or even most traditional, you know, businesses used to. So, you know, collaboration is the driver sometimes for a lot of these emerging companies, if you will, that helps them to actually achieve things that large corporates would never achieve. The way they design the business model sometimes is very open, you know, deliberately to then, you know, grasp the bigger opportunities that lie down the line, right? And this is, I think, a very interesting new way of doing business, which I can tell you from our experience is the hardest challenge that most corporate executives have to overcome when it comes to working with startups, because they literally speak two different languages to begin with. And oftentimes it's really difficult for corporate executives to wrap their head around how a company will evolve in the future, also from a business model perspective. And that scares them out, scares them off, right? So, you know, sometimes it's very obvious what you can do with a company, but oftentimes it's the cultural almost and the kind of like new way of doing business that actually, you know, makes these deals to fall through the crack.
Yeah. Okay, what is the future for FoodTech 500? How is this going to evolve?
That's a really interesting question. We have a few ideas for it. But again, we like to think that there is no business agenda behind it beyond just really generally, you know, showcasing these companies and also, I guess, raising awareness about how you can leverage data to make sense of, you know, the space. We envision a few developments, possible developments for FoodTech 500, but I guess at the core of it, we're going to try to keep it as independent and as, up and coming as possible. Again, deliberately.
You're going to start with a clean slate every single year? Wipe off the last 500 and a whole new
that's the whole point, right? I mean, if one of the things that actually struck us the most, and to be honest, was a massive learning that we did not have when we decided to pull the trigger, was how many companies were going to apply, right? How are we going to make to 500 in the first place?
Yeah, it would have been FoodTech 20, and that would have been a bit rubbish.
Yeah, right. Yeah. even 100, we debated for quite a long time. You know, should we do FD 500 or FD 100? Right, because first is more manageable. You know, for us, it's more manageable for people to rub their head around. You know, a list of 100, but then we were like, we don't think that this is reflecting the speed at which this whole space is evolving. Mm. And that's why we went bold, I guess, and decided to do 500.
Brave, but successful.
Well, time will tell us. On February the 4th, we're going to release the ranked list of companies. And that's really now the fun begins of ranking them. And thank God we're going to use also some pieces of tech that we've built internally.
So data-driven, but also opinion-based as well?
Yes, very
and
much.
Obviously, any bribes should be forwarded to Alessio at forwardfeeding. No, it's clean and serene. But a little bit of opinion as well as data to rank, which makes a lot of sense.
Big time. We are massive believers of the fact that tech can help to make sense of things, right? Can help to create efficiencies process-wise and all of that. But in order to make something valuable that actually will be digested, sorry for the food pun, people, it has to be vetted by people. Mm. So every single application that we received has been vetted by one of our team members. And only actually three of us were, you know, in charge of the project, because the moment you make it too big, I guess then you lose control of also, you know, applying the same sort of lenses when it comes to, you know, selecting the businesses, right? So the whole curation has been done manually to begin with. Now, the ranking will be based on three main criteria, which are business size score, which is a proxy of the number of employees and the funding activities that of these businesses. Mm-hmm. Digital footprint score, which is a reflection of the traffic that they actually are capable of gaining on their website, mm-hmm. and how fast they're growing over social media. Again, when you don't have, you know, financial information, I guess you also need
You've got to be creative in a way. So what? Yeah, but things like that are the
tangible.
New,
yeah, they're very tangible after all, and you know they only give you a proxy, I guess. Yeah. But I can tell you with a great level of confidence that, having been using this platform for about a year or so now, and having built it to begin with, has helped us to understand that it actually works quite well when it comes to plotting these companies on a Canva and kind of like clustering them based on their size, based on how much, you know, traffic again they gain on their website and all these type of metrics. So these two pieces will be kind of machine learning driven, as is basically there is an algorithm that crunches on the numbers and give us a score, right? The third element of Wevel is around sustainability. And this is the one that we're going to manually curate.
Because there are different levels, different concepts.
Yeah. Exactly. So first off, there is no universal definition in our view of what sustainability means to the world, right? So we're going to stick to actually, I guess, what we would refer to as environmental sustainability, right? So the questions we have posed to the applicants were how your solution effectively is impacting the SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals, and out of the 17, which one you think you're contributing the most to solving. And then based on that, we're going to derive their sustainability score, as we have asked a number of other questions that will help us to basically rank these businesses by giving them an individual score on how sustainable their solution is when it comes to having a positive impact on the environment. Mm-hmm.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, you got a huge amount of work cut out for yourself.
Well,
I don't know what you're doing sitting here talking to me. You should be turfing through all of those. But we look forward to the announcement. So February the 4th,
yes,
2020. It'd be great to chat to you again around that kind of time and find out what's going on and why you decided what you did.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be happy to do so.
Exciting stuff. Okay, Alessio Dantino, founder and CEO of Forward Fooding. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Table Talk podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please share a review. If you like what you've heard, find out more on foodmatterslive.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook.